In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xennial. But what is a Xennial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xennial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And today we're going over some headline stuff like we have been.
Yeah.
We're going to be also hopefully having a little bit of talk about the Joker movie now that it's been out for a week.
Yeah.
Been a lot of things written about it, a lot of different opinions about it.
Dude, and polar. They're really on one side or the other.
This is definitely a movie that is polarizing people in a very heavy, heavy fashion.
Yeah.
And I will admit, before we have the discussion, I have not seen it, and I have read a lot of synopsis of it. I've had description of it from Mike.
Yeah, I went and saw the movie last weekend.
So, I also have a very big background in theater. I have a big background in film. I've watched probably more films than most people that I know have watched.
Mm-hmm.
So between the full synopsis that I've read and the description of the stuff, I have a pretty good idea. I don't necessarily know the nuances of Joaquin Phoenix's performance in everything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know every single little nuance of all of it, but I have a good enough idea to be able to at least have some opinion about the film. And a caveat.
Shall we warn? Are we going to be giving away spoilers on this?
There's going to be some spoilers given away
on
this.
Okay.
There's going to be.
So this is almost like a spoiler review discussion.
To an extent. I'm going to try to keep the spoilers at a minimum because I'm not going to talk about necessarily specific things for kind of my takes on some of the things and some of the things
I've
read. I'll try to keep the spoilers to a minimum.
I'll do what I can
I think a lot of the information has already been kind of spoiled online all over the place anyway.
Yeah.
This is one of those movies that there's nothing in it that necessarily requires too many secrets to be kept.
No, and some of the feel and some of the spoilers that have come out that I've seen, like some of the milder ones, are the ones that are kind of pretty much assumed from the trailer.
Yeah. I don't think
you're just
anything
talking about outside reference, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I think. Okay, so, I can understand that.
But let's get to what kind of things happened within the last week. I real quick mention, football was a nice weekend for me again.
Yeah, dude,
it was a very good weekend.
Yeah,
we're still trying to put together a time to do a football episode with our buddy Scott. We're seeing if we can work some scheduling out. Hopefully, we'll let you guys know when that's going to happen.
Yeah, hopefully
but
soon.
But yeah, football was a good weekend again. That's all. I don't want to say much more. But it's because I don't like to talk up too many things. I'd rather wait and see what happens.
Okay.
I'll be talking big come February if things happen good up till then. If not, hey, it doesn't happen, and that's all right.
We might even have a review. I'd like to get a little bit of a background of what's going on this stuff too.
I casually watch
football. I watch the game because it's fun, but I'm not like a diehard.
I religiously watch it.
I know you do.
And it's straight
see,
up.
See, I've got a good source of the information. So,
oh, yeah.
All right. So moving on to the headlines. I don't even know. We should call this like a certain type of segment. We should title it or something. I don't know. Maybe.
We'll come up with something at some point. This is still the format we're working
on. We're still like, okay. So let's see. I guess we'll start with the lighter information first. Celebrity deaths.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's very light. Although there wasn't that many, was there?
Not that I saw really of note. Don't get me wrong. There may have been some details that I have missed. I just haven't seen them. The one that I caught most recently was Robert Forster, who I am not very familiar with.
He was a very prolific actor in I think 70s and 80s. Most people in our generation, most of the Xennials, will probably only know him from his performance in Jackie Brown.
Okay. That makes sense that Quentin Tarantino would hit him up because anybody that was involved in those, he tends to pull a lot of those actors.
Jackie Brown
was like, that was like a parody of blaxploitation films, wasn't it?
Well, I wouldn't say a parody. Most of Quentin Tarantino's films are made more in the style of homage.
Oh, okay.
They're not really parodies per se. They're more homage because parody is poking fun at the source material.
Yeah.
Like Mel Brooks's parody. The people who did
Black Dynamite was parody.
Yeah, yeah.
Black Dynamite was parody of blaxploitation.
That's
films.
More of
yeah.
a parody of that.
Boy,
this is an homage to the blaxploitation films. Very much so. Jackie Brown was definitely an homage to it. And Quentin Tarantino kind of does that in all of his movies.
Yeah.
Kill Bill was an homage to the Hughes Brothers movies and to many, many different kung fu style movies.
Yeah.
Or not the Hughes Brothers, Shaw Brothers.
Shaw Brothers.
Shaw Brothers movies. The Hateful Eight is actually just, I mean, that's a full on.
That's straight up like spaghetti western.
Yeah, spaghetti western.
I loved that film too.
I can't think of the director's name. I'm thinking of the the guy who did the music for those movies. And
well, he did the music for that film. Ennio Morricone?
Yeah.
He wrote that theme.
Wouldn't surprise
me. And it's a great theme in that film. That's one of the standout parts of that film is the theme.
Wouldn't surprise me. You do know that that Kurt Russell broke a like super expensive, like one of a kind guitar in that movie.
I know that story, and I'm going to tell you that right now. Yeah. Because I love that story. Okay. So what happened was it takes place in like the 1890s. Quentin Tarantino had rented an 1890s era original Martin D28 acoustic guitar,
which is a very expensive guitar at this point in time.
Now, they had a secondary guitar. Yeah. They had a secondary backup that was meant for smashing because the scene was already written.
Yeah, that he was going to smash the guitar.
Right. Okay, so in this scene, Jennifer Jason Leigh's character is playing the guitar.
Okay.
And Kurt Russell's character gets pissed at her, grabs the guitar, and smashes it. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, at this point, what was supposed to happen was the guitar was supposed to be swapped with the replacement in that take, and then he's supposed to pick up the copy and smash it.
But it was shot, let me guess, shot in a single take.
It was shot in a single take. Kurt was not aware that it was the original.
And just busted it.
And busted an original 1890s Martin acoustic guitar.
Crazy.
And since then, Martin has completely swore off renting any guitars to anyone because of that. And if you see the shot, that take of Jennifer going, like, freaking out, like,
she knows it's the real guitar.
She knew it was the real one, and she's freaking out in the take. And he kept it for the take because it was super effective, because that's what Tarantino does.
Yeah.
If he, you know, he'll keep the mistakes in there, or not so much a mistake, but he keeps the genuine reaction. Yeah, like, he does that. He's very, I don't know, I would call it, like, he's a very
in the moment.
Maybe
director.
I can call it, yeah, he's in the moment. He's almost, I'd like to call him like a method director because
I can see what you're saying there, yeah.
You know,
he's
like
he's wanting the genuine reaction if he can keep genuine reaction as much as possible.
Exactly. I mean, there's the scene in Inglourious Basterds where it's his hands choking the girl. I can't remember her name.
Diane Kruger.
Yes. He's actually choking her on purpose because he wanted a certain semblance of realism, and
his explanation,
she agreed to it.
His
and
explanation
kind of stuff,
is that he wanted the real the semblance of realism for it. I personally think he was working out one of his own personal fetish fantasies, but that's just my opinion on the subject.
Oh my! Good night, everybody.
Just because that there are there just I just believe me. That's a possibility.
Wow.
I'm just gonna
say
that.
I'm done with that.
Another interesting moment similar to
we're talking about all of the films without Forrester in them.
I was just gonna comment real quick. Another one of those interesting reaction moments in not necessarily as well loved a film as anything that Quentin Tarantino's done, Alien Resurrection.
Yeah.
There's a moment where Sigourney Weaver's character does a an over-the-back shot and sinks a basket.
Yeah.
Because she's shooting hoops, and then she just flings it back over her head and sinks the basket. She actually did that in camera.
Wow.
That was a real shot. She had practiced doing it. And I can't think of the actor's name right now. I'm having a blank. The original Hellboy actor. Ron Perlman broke character because she made it, and he just it was super excited and completely broke character. And you see a little snippet right before he actually says something, and then it's like, oh crap, I broke character. You get the snippet of reaction on his face, and then that's when the scene ends. But they wanted to keep it in because his surprised reaction and the fact that she actually made the shot and the reactions were perfect together for it.
That's fantastic. I like seeing that kind of stuff. That's kind of cool.
But anyway, back to Jackie Brown.
But I've never seen Jackie Brown.
Interesting movie. Really weird characterizations in it that some of them fit the blaxploitation stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting. We're going to talk about Joker. Robert De Niro has a very, very strange character in this movie.
Interesting.
Very strange character. Okay. A couple of uncomfortable sex scenes with him.
Weird.
One uncomfortable sex scene with him in the movie. It's really weird.
Okay.
But I'll the whole of things, it's a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Forster has a very understated but important role in the film.
Oh, really?
That was one of his later roles. He hadn't done
it was a bit
lot.
More of a like a breakout for him at that time, right?
Yeah, it was
like he ended up getting a lot more attention because of it.
It was one of those resurgent things like what John Travolta got from being in Pulp Fiction.
Cool.
Kind of a resurgence of the career. The career had kind of been at that point he was kind of forgotten and it was a resurgence. Sadly, I don't have a whole lot more information on him and I feel kind of bad about it.
Oh. All right.
But that's the one movie I really know him from.
Cool.
But he's been in, I know he's been in many more. It's just the only thing I really know him well from.
Cool.
All right.
Well, let's see. We have more. Or we don't have any more celebrity deaths.
No more deaths this week.
We have more news, though.
Okay, what other
just in general. Honestly, like all that I could find is music related news.
Okay.
A little bit, you know, I'll do another downer and then I'll bring another one up.
Okay.
Okay. So the next thing I've seen is, so I don't know if you've heard, there was a podcast that keeps being quoted that David Lee Roth was a guest on.
Okay. I think I maybe heard something about this. David Lee Roth had some comments about Van Halen.
Yeah. And basically he's like, Van Halen is pretty much done. Like,
okay.
He's like, Van Halen's not getting back together. He's like, yeah, we used to argue, had our falling outs and stuff. But basically, without saying anything, he's like, Van Halen's finished. He didn't make any other comments outside of it. They did hit up other people as well, like Michael Anthony, who's just like, yeah, it's not happening anymore. So now Michael Anthony, there's been rumors of him wanting to get back together with Van Halen. Since he left some time ago, he's
the bass player. But Wolfgang took
Wolfgang over. Is currently the bass player. Yeah, he was on the Different Kind of Truth album, and he helped produce it and all that kind of stuff. But
okay.
But that aside, basically the big issue right now is there's a couple of rumors swirling around that are based on some stuff that already happened, which is not really looking good. Basically, so there's rumors that Eddie Van Halen's cancer has returned.
Okay.
He's been seeking treatment actually in Germany since 2017.
Okay.
Now he attributes this to it's really funny because that guy did like all the drugs.
Yeah.
And he smoked all of the cigarettes.
Yeah.
And he had throat cancer. Was what he had.
Did he get it from cunnilingus like Michael Douglas?
No, is that what Michael Douglas said?
That's an appropriate medical term, first of all.
That's interesting. We're not going to describe what that is, but okay, wow.
Michael Douglas claimed that
he claimed that that's what it was.
That's what contributed to his throat cancer.
You blindsided me with that. I had no idea.
Sorry.
So no. So anyways, no, he did not attribute it to it, but he attributed it to the fact that he would hold his guitar pick. He had a metal guitar pick, which was like a combination of like copper and brass or something like that.
Okay.
He was using.
That's what he was using to try to get some.
He would
sound
hold the guitar pick in his mouth, and the section of his tongue that had to be cut out from the cancer he had in 2000, which he had the front of his tongue cut out,
okay,
because it had the cancer on it. And then he had been receiving radiation treatment, and he beat it at some point. But basically, he attributed it to holding the metal guitar pick in his mouth.
Real quick sidebar.
Yeah.
I know you're a big Van Halen fan. I'm not as much.
Yeah.
Favorite Van Halen vocalist?
It's honestly like a tie-off between...
The
it's honestly a tie-off
ones?
Between the two main ones, between David and Sammy. If you want to say a vocalist, period, I would say Sammy Hagar.
Okay.
If you want to say a front man, it's David.
I like Gary Cherone, but that was me.
Gary was a good singer, but the material wasn't that great.
Not at that time. I agree. I just liked his voice better than the other
two. He has a great voice.
Yeah.
If you ever checked out any of the stuff by Extreme, Pornograffiti, which is like their second album, so good. So good. I've got a copy of it.
As long as it's not the one song that everybody knows from Extreme, which is still a good song.
It has that on the album. It was their breakout album. But they've got so much more on that album.
But anyway,
none of the album sounds like that.
So the cancer maybe has come back.
The cancer may have returned. Apparently, he's been receiving treatments since 2017.
Okay.
And one of the big issues right now that has come to light is that Valerie Bertinelli, his ex-wife, has been visiting him somewhat on the regular for consolation.
Okay.
Which is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of good news that's coming out of the Van Halen camp right now, which I was like, damn, that sucks, because Van Halen was, when they reunited with Dave, I wanted to see them really, really bad, and yeah. I never had the opportunity. And the shows that they had been doing and how well they had been working together on stage and all this kind of stuff,
that would be,
like, it just
be one of those,
sounded so good.
That'd be one of those like bucket list style bands for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you know? Like AC/DC's a bucket list band, and now that Brian's back with them, like I'd want to see that again.
There was a time when
I would have even seen him with Axl, man. He was kicking.
He didn't do a bad job.
Yeah.
I will admit Guns N' Roses would be one, not as much for me as for my wife. I'd love for her to get a chance to see them, and I would love to be along to see with them.
Yeah.
Or with her. Tool, I've always wanted to see, and then Pearl Jam. I really want to see Pearl Jam at some point. Never had an opportunity to see them live.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. That's got to be a thing. That's got to happen.
I mean, I saw Perfect Circle live, but that's not Tool. It's still Maynard singing, but it's not Tool.
I've seen Tool.
I have not.
They were the best sound and probably the smoothest concert I had ever seen.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Up to that point. And I'm talking in comparison with Metallica.
That wouldn't surprise
me. They were that good.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Great stage show, too. Okay.
So that's the Van Halen news. So maybe
a little bit.
It's very possible that Van Halen may at some point or another be on our list of deceased celebrities.
That is going to be pretty devastating to me because Van Halen was one of the groups that got me into guitar playing.
Yeah,
and I've actually been kind of drilling. I've been drilling myself on since I've got a guitar now that actually has, like, not to say that none of the other guitars are. I have quite a few guitars, but I have one that I custom built.
Yeah.
I custom built it for Rage Against the Machine type music. Mm-hmm. But I turned around, and because the way that the guitar sits and the way that the neck feels, it's so comfortable to play that I was busting out some Van Halen on it I could never pull off on a Les Paul.
Oh, well, because it's more of a Strat style, right?
Yeah, it's a Strat.
Yeah.
It's so a Strat copy.
That makes a difference.
It's a Strat body, actually.
That makes a difference in the way that that the guitar plays. If,
yes,
for people who
very
have
much.
Not ever played a guitar, the different body styles have so many different things that they create for you. Mm-hmm. Some of them have the difference in the tone that they create for you. And you can change that up by the body style, the pickups, but the body style also is different in the way that it feels while you're trying to play it. The way a neck is built, the way, mm-hmm. like I've always found that the LP styles have a much thicker neck.
Yeah.
So I feel better personally playing more rhythm stuff on those.
Yeah.
And the more Strat style bodies, I have a thinner neck usually.
Mm-hmm.
I like a really thin neck because yeah. I have kind of small hands. And
yeah.
Playing on those is a lot easier. Plus that the cutout scoop for any high yep. notes are going to be a lot easier to get into.
Yeah.
So sorry, that's my little bit of knowledge for guitar stuff.
I was going to say, we can get into the technical stuff and I'll tell you that outside of it.
Yeah.
If we ever get guitar news, the only thing that I could remember is that that I could think of that might be guitar related was back during the Paradise Fire last year. I found this out recently.
Yeah.
Wayne Charvel.
Why is that name familiar?
Charvel Guitars.
Okay.
Wayne Charvel, who is one of the best, like one of the best luthiers in the world, lived in Paradise.
Luthier being a guitar maker.
Yeah. Lived in Paradise.
Really? I did not know that.
His entire collection is gone.
Wow.
It's destroyed.
Wow.
That was one thing I found out, like, over the last week, and it was like, whoa, man. And we're talking like these are guitars that were given back to Wayne that he had sold to professional players that are gone.
Yeah, I mean, that's why the name sounded familiar.
Yeah.
And no,
Charvel is looking any if it's not a Fender or an Ibanez, it's a Charvel. It's
yeah.
one of those three in every 80s virtuosic
guitar players
videos.
Nice.
Like any of them, look them up. Like they're all playing Charvels.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, the San Dimas, which is like the most famous Strat style model that he had. The San Dimas is the Shredder's guitar.
Nice.
Like straight up. But yeah, so that's completely off on the side.
Wow.
But to bring it up a little bit before we keep moving forward.
Okay, more news, but happier
yeah.
news.
I don't know if you remember hearing about this. I think back in like 2013, Wayne Static, the lead singer and the founder of Static X, died. He passed yeah. away. I think it was a drug overdose.
Is this the thing I sent you?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And I actually found out about it a couple of days beforehand,
okay.
But there's a little bit more that's come out past it.
Yeah, okay.
So basically, Static X, the original lineup of Static X, they came out with an album. Their debut album was called Wisconsin Death Trip. Great album. It came out in like 2000. Yeah. They were kind of around that industrial new metal type era of music when they first came out. Static X is actually one of my favorite heavier bands.
Yeah.
They're so good. They were so good. Well, the original three.
I can say that I don't have a lot of experience with their music. I'm sure I know a few of their songs, but I don't have a lot of experience. I don't have enough to be able to hear a song and go, oh, yeah, that's them.
Well, the way that their style evolved was great, and Static X is essentially Wayne Static and whoever the other three guys were at the time.
I used to like his hair.
Yeah, his hair is awesome.
His hair is totally awesome.
His hair is totally awesome.
Totally awesome.
So it was totally awesome, yes. Well, the band got together and started touring this year. They were promoting. They're actually doing decently well right now. I think Wisconsin Death Trip was 20. It's 20 years old this year. It came out in 99. Okay. That's what it was. So they're touring in support of the 20th anniversary of Wisconsin Death Trip.
Okay.
They actually did a couple of re-recordings of some of their older material, and they wrote some new songs. And
which had his vocals on it, didn't they? There were some new songs.
A lot of new songs. Okay, so yeah, Wayne had an archive of songs that he had been writing at the time.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And so the surviving members of the original lineup of Static X got their hands on, you know, from Wayne's estate, they got their hands on these recordings, and they have been building these songs, and they've been reaching out to multiple people of the same era or after to put some guest vocals on to kind of fill in some of the spots and basically construct an entire new album.
That's kind of, as a fan of the band Avenged Sevenfold,
yeah,
one of their most powerful albums is the Nightmare album,
mm-hmm.
Because of the fact that you can feel, if you know their material and you've listened to their material before that, and especially their material after that album,
mm-hmm.
you can really feel the effect of their drummer, Rev, on the album, and the fact that he had helped write, they'd basically written the majority of the album before he passed away.
Yeah.
And you can feel him on there. And there's even some tracks where they took his demo vocals and his demo stuff that he did and put it into the track.
Yes.
Directly. And there's some very powerful tracks with that in it, because he was a backing vocal for many of the things in the band. And in fact, we saw them in their first concert tour that they did after he had passed, with Mike Portnoy filling in on the drums.
Yeah.
Who did the drums for the recording, obviously, of the Nightmare album.
Yeah.
And there were a few moments in some of the songs where it was the parts that Rev would normally sing in the song.
Mm-hmm.
And
they ran the recording.
Yeah, you had the pre-recorded voice of Rev singing it, and it was eerie, but
It was definitely a very emotional moment.
And very reverential to it. Not trying to make a joke or anything on the name. But so that's kind of neat, especially for fans of Static X, to have this kind of a gift left over from the singer.
Right. So essentially what they've been doing, and I can't wait for this album to come out, what they've been doing is they've been touring in support of Wisconsin Death Trip. And they have an entire album's worth, essentially, of material that they're going to be working with. To create a new album,
for this new release,
which is great. It's all Wayne's original vocals and stuff. And I think they released, I'm not positive, I have to look into it, they may have released a new single.
Okay.
With Wayne's vocals, so you can kind of hear, because they're playing some of the new material on the tour.
Yeah.
And they have hired another singer.
Well, obviously you need to have somebody to be singing for the band when it's on tour.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do a hologram projection, I guess, but...
Right.
I mean, it's been done before, but
right.
I don't know how well it'll pull off for, I mean.
Doing like club shows and festivals and stuff playing during the day.
If it would pull off for a rock band, I can think of one rock band that would have done that already.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think they would totally get the aesthetic of doing something like that. I think not to rip on Adam Lambert in any way, shape, or form.
Oh my goodness! But
Queen would have done the hologram if they thought that would really, really work well.
Yeah.
Because that is literally the type of band that would be like, yeah, okay, we'll put a hologram of Freddie up there. That's all good. We could deal with that. But I don't think it works as well with a rock band as it does. And it only works, I think, in small settings, not necessarily.
Actually, that has been done with a metal band.
Me?
I am actually you. Okay. They did it with Ronnie James Dio.
You're right. They did do it with Dio, but then, well, Dio's isn't. Okay, unpopular opinion. Dio isn't quite on the level of Freddie Mercury, so I get it.
I think he's extremely accomplished, and I think to compare the two is unfair.
He is extremely accomplished, but he's not Freddie Mercury. That's just me.
Opinion. You're looking at, yeah, that's like trying to compare Ronnie James Dio to Robert Plant. You don't do it.
No.
But that
is it a British thing? Maybe.
Possibly. That's a good question. So that being said, we have
this new lead singer for this fill-in lead singer at this point, basically for Static X.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some rumors I hear about his identity because he wears a mask.
It may have been yes. Yeah, so Zero wears Zero, really creepy looking
Zero with an X, right?
Zero with an X,
yeah,
and a zero at the end of for the O. So he wears a very creepy, like almost zombie looking mask that is in the style of Wayne Static's head.
Yeah.
And it's got the top cut off.
Yeah.
So he can sing accurately. And it's got, you know, big, like, you know, splitting skin kind of,
yeah.
It's all grayed out. It looks okay. Some people were offended when they first saw it. The more you see it though, the more it fits in with what Wayne's style would have been.
Yeah.
Like he would have done that at some point.
He would have looked at that and thought, oh, okay, that's cool. I can deal with that.
Yeah. And so I'm all about it. I think it's cool. But there was very much a strong rumor at the very beginning of when they first put this out. They saw Zero the singer. And they were like, that guy looks like Edsel Dope. We can't put our finger on it. But Edsel Dope is the lead singer of the band Dope.
The band Dope. That band sounds familiar. I think I've seen them before.
I believe you have.
Actually, I have. I've seen them in concert before.
Yes, you have.
I've been about 20 feet away from them.
Yes.
Moreover, I think you've played on the same stage as them on that night. That's pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah. It was great, man. I saw them at Soundcheck and all that. It was great.
I will say they have one of their songs is one of my favorite songs, and it's definitely one of my favorite to play around people who have any issues at all with foul language in music. It is so much fun to play around them. I can't even there would be too much editing for Mike to do if I was actually to recite the chorus of he would just literally have to blank the whole thing out. All I'm going to say is it's a great song. It gets me fired up. It gets me pumped.
It's a good song.
Plus their covers are just amazing.
They are good. Yeah.
The one about the police.
Oh, yeah.
The song you don't want to ever play when there are police around you, unless they're really cool police, because then they might enjoy the song, too, and find the humor in it. But, that's originally a rap song, and yet it fits well with their thing.
Yeah.
But
when they got their other – oh, yeah, the Like a Record?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great
version. Or You Spin Me Round, I think, is the name of the song.
That's a great version of that song. And then the Billy Idol one that they do.
Oh yeah, they do Rebel. Is that Rebel Yell?
Yes, I believe it is Rebel Yell.
Yeah, no, they do. They have quite a few covers they do, and they're smoking at all of them. But anyways, the rumor has been that Edsel Dope has been the singer.
Okay,
and I mean, there's a lot of confirmation with it. One of them is that
the neck tattoo picture.
The neck tattoo picture is the one that I was going to allude. I was going to eventually get to.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's all good.
I jumped.
There's a picture of live footage where now when. When Zero is on stage, he wears long sleeve shirts, and you make sure that you can't see because he's also playing guitar. He wears long sleeve shirts, and he's wearing like a turtleneck long sleeve shirt.
So there's nothing, so
nobody can
see
anything because
stuff.
Obviously Edsel is totally decked out in tattoos all over the place. Well,
yeah.
There's one little tiny neck tattoo that on his neck. What he does, he wears like black face paint around his neck so you can't see any distinguishing marks.
I can tell you right now, it is really, really hard, especially on the neck.
Mm-hmm.
To hide tattoos,
right?
When you're trying to do something where you're not supposed to have neck tattoos, you're trying to disguise yourself in any way.
Yeah,
neck tattoos are the worst spot because you sweat so much there, and they're really, really hard to cover up with makeup. It's really hard. There's really no clothing you can do short of wearing a turtleneck or a burka,
right?
To cover that stuff up. I mean, seriously, it's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. So basically, the rumor has come out now. There was a Danish website called Metal A Day that outed Edsel Dope as the singer. by matching a singular neck tattoo on the right side of his neck. It is just this little tiny black splotch.
It almost
splotch.
Looks like Florida. Seriously, it looks like Florida.
Maybe he's from Florida. But he is... Now, the band Dope is currently touring with Static X. So that's another point towards it. The neck tattoo, like all that kind of stuff.
Hold on. I just want to make the comment. If the band Dope is currently touring with Static X, and he's both doing vocals for Dope...
And for Static X,
that dude... Wow.
His vocal cords are made of iron.
They must be because the Dope stuff is some heavy vocals.
Static X is even heavier than that.
Yeah.
And so, he has to go on out. Let's imagine that this is the case. Like, he has to go on after he does Dope and then do the heavy stuff. It's like, let's go ahead and run a marathon and then sprint the last 3 miles.
Yeah.
That's insane.
That is not fun.
Like, continuously. No breaks.
But again, if he is doing that, kudos to him.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that, I hope it is him, because I thought that might be the case. I believe the rumors that it was Edsel from the start.
Now, he's denying it over and
he
over.
He is denying it. Right now, he denies the rumors as clickbait and a Scooby-Doo scavenger hunt, which I think is... That's total, like, come on, man. Like, I think it's Edsel. I totally think it's Edsel. And when the tour is over, they will reveal his name, but they're trying not to reveal the name so that they can concentrate on the legacy of Wayne Static during these shows.
Which makes a lot of sense.
Total respect.
Yeah, total respect for that. Although, you know, they may or may not reveal the name. I mean, how hard is it to find out who's ever played in Ghost?
Right.
You know? I mean, the lead singer just keeps changing characters each time they do a new album.
Yeah.
But... Who the hell else has ever played in Ghost? I mean, there's been rumors of so many different people playing in it. There's been rumors that my brain is not working on names today. Foo Fighters, Nirvana.
Oh, yeah.
What's his name, damn it?
Dave Grohl?
Yes, Dave Grohl has played multiple things in Ghost. He's played drums for Ghost. He's played guitar. That's been rumors I've heard about it. He's
been
all over the place in Ghost.
Oh,
Dave
that's
Grohl,
great.
Of all people.
That's great. He's done metal projects before. Like, he actually, one of my favorite side projects.
Queens of Stone Age.
He was drums for Queens of the Stone Age's first album.
Yeah.
He was the drummer on the debut Tenacious D album, I believe.
His role in the Tenacious
his role,
D movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh God, it's the best part of the whole movie.
But there is, yeah, he's kind of in everything. He did a metal project called Probot. With a bunch of guest singers in it.
I remember this, actually. I remember hearing about this.
It was pretty cool. But I know Lemmy was... he actually wrote... I remembered hearing that Lemmy wrote two sets of lyrics to the same song. And he's like, do you like this one or do you like this one? And he's just too busy going, Lemmy's singing on my song right now.
Yeah. Well, I could understand that.
But... Yeah, that's pretty much all of the headline stuff that we got. That's our first little section, I think.
And I think we filled up the first section fairly good with that.
Yeah, I think
so,
it was all right.
We're going to take a break, as usual. And when we come back, we're going to have a few discussions on this Joker movie phenomenon. So if you don't want to know anything at all about the movie, we'll try to be careful on what spoilers we bring out. We'll try to keep it...
Possibly stuff that's... I would like to keep it trailer-esque.
We'll try to do as much as possible.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to know anything about this movie and you haven't been paying attention to any news media about this movie, because everything we discuss for the most part is going to be the stuff the news media has discussed.
Yeah.
If you haven't paid attention to any of it, then I guess don't listen to the second half of this. But
fair warning now.
I'd prefer if you did, but we don't want to spoil anything for you. We know how that is when movies are spoiled.
Yeah.
So we'll be back in a minute.
See you in a bit. Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled Xenchron, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And welcome back, everybody. Hope you enjoyed your break. I know I did. That's all you have is a little laugh.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm gonna do a little laugh.
Yep.
Little sweet little laugh. All right, so
I didn't have anything in mind, so
we'll be talking about something that involves laughing, and that is, of course, the promised talk about the Joker movie starring Joaquin Phoenix.
Yep.
So go ahead. What do you have to say about
this? So far, honestly, like we were talking about before, really super controversial. There's a lot of people that absolutely hate it. There's a lot of people that absolutely love it.
I can say you and me and your wife had a 2-hour almost discussion about this movie last week.
Trying to turn this into like 30 minutes. Hopefully we can. We'll see what we can make happen.
I'm just wanting to present a few of the ideas that have kind of come to me in the last week since having our discussion of possible interpretations of this film. I mean, this is definitely a film that has been made that is not, I don't think it's entirely clear cut one single message that can come away from this film.
I think there are so many
different interpretations of this film. First of all, anytime you deal with a character that is a well-known character in popular lexicon and you give a different spin on the character, there's always going to be the issue of that, first of all.
Yes, very much so.
Think about what happened every single time we had an iteration of the character that spawned the Joker, the Batman. Every time we've had an iteration of the Batman, I mean, I don't remember it as much because I was a little kid, but there was huge backlash over Michael Keaton being Batman.
Well, there's been backlash over practically everybody who's been Batman. I think Val Kilmer was the only one that people were like, oh, yeah, I could see that. And that one wasn't great. But
actually, that's interestingly enough, of the original four movies of Batman, which all basically happened within, supposed to happen within the same universe. I mean, the same Alfred in all of them. So,
yeah.
And the same Commissioner Gordon in all of them. So that's kind of one universe together.
Yeah.
Batman Forever is actually my favorite of those.
I thought it was all right. There's a lot that I liked about the villains. As much as people were really not digging on Tommy Lee Jones,
I thought he was fantastic.
And I thought
it sucked. It sucked that that Billy Dee Williams didn't get to have that villain role.
I know. I wanted that to happen so bad.
That really sucks. But Tommy Lee Jones owned it.
He did, but he also. So here's the thing about Tommy Lee Jones. If you look at what Tommy Lee Jones is doing, the way that he's acting, as eccentric as he seems a lot more Joker-esque than Two-Face-esque to me. But that doesn't mean that the liberty can't be taken with the character. It still is workable.
I get you. His Two-Face would not have worked in like a rogues gallery all working together type movie.
Right.
It would have been too much up against the Joker. There would have been too much conflict, and you couldn't have told the characters really apart.
Yeah,
that there needs to be Two-Face typically again in a much larger universe where those things are shared more, like the animated universe, for instance, where those villains have some overlap and they interact with each other sometimes. You can't have the extremes that Tommy Lee Jones was going to in that because it would have infringed too much upon the area that is the Joker. Same with the Riddler. The Riddler got to too many extremes that were very Joker-esque during that movie.
Yeah,
that should have been, that would definitely have been dialed more back in a. The original series, actually, as much campy as that original series was, the Adam West, Burt Ward, Batman series, as campy as it was, it did a really good job when it brought those villains together in that it gave each one of them their own little points. A little too character, you know, caricature of the characters sometimes, but at least it helped you distinguish between them.
That's the thing, is no two characters were alike in any iteration.
Yeah.
At that point. I thought that was very creative.
It tells
you a lot of the range that the actors had.
Well, if you look at the movie that came off of the original Batman series, you have the Penguin, the Riddler, the Joker, and Catwoman in there, or a Catwoman in there. I mean, it's the only appearance that she had as the Catwoman, but still.
Like three of them, yeah.
There were three of them. But
who was in the movie?
It wasn't Julie, was it? No, it was Lee Merriweather.
Okay.
Julie Newmar was in the
she was
the first
in the series,
one.
And so was Eartha Kitt.
So was Eartha Kitt. Lee Merriweather was the one in the movie.
Oh, okay.
But each one of them had their own specific things. You know, all of Penguin's people were all of his minions were, you know, naval type minions. The Joker had his specific little tricks and jokes that would happen. The Riddler, everything was about riddles, no matter what it was. Let's shoot an ICBM up into the air and it'll explode and create a riddle. Words in the clouds.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, totally bogus stuff, but still, hey, it's a comic book thing. It's fantasy. Yeah. It's not cinema, but it's fantasy. Sorry, personal dig. Anyway, moving on. Yeah, Scorsese, he never wants to meet me. Oh, him and I will have much conversation. But anyway, there's been multiple versions of these characters, and this is a major character. So anytime you have these changes, you have something different as a story, you're going to have some backlash.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I have, again, the caveat from the beginning, I have not actually seen the movie.
Okay.
But I don't think that seeing the movie will make a difference in the specifics of this opinion.
I feel like you've generated so much of that opinion already that it's not going to change it, whether or not you see it.
Yes and no. I think it's possible, although I do have an open mind about seeing if things work in a different way than what I've already envisioned them or what I've already thought for them to be.
Yeah.
I can change my mind on things, and I can admit when I change my mind on things.
Mm-hmm.
Example, I'll take it in the world of football. There was a football player who is now a 49er. Who, before being a 49er, he was a Seahawk, and I hated him with a passion of a thousand suns.
Right.
But finding out more of his backstory, finding out more of his history, and finding out the type of person he actually is as a teammate and a locker room person,
mm-hmm.
Helps me to put a little bit more of the things in perspective. Do I like it when he still acts in some of the loud mouth and brash ways that he does? No, it's still annoying, but I have a lot more respect for him. Also, the contract that he signed and set up when he became a 49er,
mm-hmm.
he set up a contract where it was literally all of the 75% of the money he was going to earn was based on what he did on the field, not upfront money. He was betting on himself to accomplish certain things before he got paid. And so a lot of these, and he negotiated.
He creates the incentive for himself to perform.
He negotiated his own contract and set up his own contract to do this. So,
basically it's like, I want only to have this when I do this.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay.
Yeah, here's the contract. And so it made me have a lot more respect for him once I was able to find out more information about him as a person. And
that's kind of cool.
At first, he was just a villain for me. He was just a bad guy.
Well, that's the thing, is you only knew, the only things that you knew about the guy was just what he had done on screen, period.
Yeah, what he had done in the games, and his attitude that he had, and the way he was our opponent.
Right.
And knowing more about him. If he had just got onto our team, I wouldn't have just completely embraced him. In fact, when he did, I was kind of, when he first signed, I was like, man, this guy's got to be on my team. But as more stuff started coming out about him, more stuff started, becoming visible to the media in this area anyway. I'm sure people knew about that stuff about him in Seattle a long time ago, but that was in Seattle where he was a Seahawk. But just an example, I can change my mind on things when I'm presented with a different set of evidence.
Okay.
This is based on just the information that I have at hand.
Okay.
My first concern with this is the way in which the characters kind of spiral into insanity happens. And the specific things that he does. Now, not to give too much away, but there are murders committed.
Yes.
By him.
Yes.
In fact, he does the majority of the
boy, this is going to be really hard to have this conversation with us.
He does the majority of the direct killing of people on screen. Now, I'm not saying that people aren't killed otherwise.
Well, here's the thing. There is some stuff that is alluded to without actually happening.
Exactly. But that's why I'm saying. That's why I said.
And it wouldn't make sense to do that at the same time. It doesn't gel with the character.
Well, are you talking about the girl?
Yes.
Now that's a whole different subject.
That's already, we're already getting into the spoiler territory.
But that's a different subject. I'm talking about specifically on screen, the deaths that happen on screen, the murder that happens on screen. He is responsible for the majority of them, with the exception of the normal lore thing that happens, the classic Batman lore thing that happens.
Yes.
The alleyway thing.
Yes.
Other than that
happens, and he is
he's not directly responsible for that. But the other murders that appear on screen, physically on screen of people being killed, he's responsible for.
Okay, yes.
Okay, that's right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And the way in which he does most of these killings, there is no premeditation to it, correct? It's usually a response to specifically some kind of stimulus, specifically stimulus dealing with his previous mental illnesses that he's had. But there's stimulus involved in each one of the killings, and it directly happens after the stimulus in some way, shape, or form.
Up to the point, yes.
Yes, okay. This is the issue that I have personally.
Why?
No, not because these things happen, because I don't feel in my personal understanding of the character of the Joker as he has been displayed within comic books, within other mediums, these are more the examples of somebody that's either more spree killing or more reactionary killing, whereas Joker is more of a sadist. The character of Joker is more sadistic than just reacting to something and killing something. His MO is much more about inflicting pain and damage than just straight killing. There's no sadist moments. Even the one killing that's a little more of a bloody killing. Okay. And it is bloody and violent, yeah. Yes. Yeah. But it's still fairly quick, right?
Very fast.
Okay, there's no
it comes in as a surprise. This is actually one thing that happens in the film is a lot of people are claiming that there is some kind of sensationalism. There isn't. Okay. There is not.
Gunshots
that go off, when they go off, they sound natural. They sound far more natural. It is a small pop. It's there. Don't hear the.
And I'm not saying that. I'm not talking
the details of that. Actually, you see it happen, and that's it. And it's more jarring because it's realistic.
Which I get that, and in fact that will lead into the second point that I'm going to make.
Yeah.
Actually, even further. So remember the gunshot part and it being natural.
I want you to finish your point because I have a rebuttal to this point. Okay. This needs to be a fair 50-50 deal.
To me, I look at, and the Killing Joke is supposed to be one of the possible kind of inspirations for this.
Relatively speaking, kind of, yes.
The Killing Joke is, to me, a perfect example. And Killing Joke is dark, probably far darker even than this movie. Very dark in the subject matter that happens.
It depends on the way that you take a look at it. But okay, yeah, I understand. It's too... Okay, yeah, well, please continue.
The Killing Joke involves more... involves, to me, more of what the core of the Joker is. He is a sadist. His main reason for doing the violence part of the things that he does is for the pain and torture and torment of other people. That's more important to him than the kill.
That wasn't the point of the Killing Joke.
Really?
Yes.
Is not the Killing Joke to try to drive Commissioner Gordon insane?
Yes,
that's
correct.
That's the sadism of it.
That's not the sadism. You're missing the point of the Killing Joke.
You're missing the point of sadism.
You're missing the point of the Killing Joke. Okay, sadism is for people that get off on causing hurt and pain to other people.
Yes, and it can be psychological.
That is not what the point of the Killing Joke
What's
is.
What's the point of the Killing Joke?
The point of the Killing Joke is that the Joker went through a single horrendous day where his entire life fell apart in front of him.
Yeah.
And it changed his outlook on humanity and on society and everything else.
And he's wanting what to do the same thing to
Gordon. What he's trying to do is convert Gordon by introducing that hellish experience and trying to bring his world down around him on purpose. This is why it is so important when he tells Batman at the end of that horrendous experience.
Yeah.
Take him in by the book. Do not kill him. Don't do anything to him. Bring him in. I want him alive and I want him to pay by the book like anybody else. Because if he asked for the Joker to be killed, which against his more prominent emotions, because you knew he was experiencing those emotions. If he fell victim to those emotions, then the Joker would have succeeded in his plan to convert Gordon to a sadistic bastard. And he didn't do it. Now the Joker became that, but it shows you the fortitude, the moral fortitude between the difference of moral fortitude between Gordon and the Joker. Those are the two major protagonists of this
story.
Yes,
I get that. And that's
but it's not about sadism. He's not doing it for the enjoyment. He's doing it to convert Gordon, to show him, this is what my life has been. This is what my life is like, and I want you to experience it firsthand. It's not about sadism. It's not about enjoying what he's doing. Is he enjoying what he's doing? Absolutely. Is he a sadist? Yes. That's not the point of why he's doing it, though.
I disagree. I see that as entirely the point of why he's doing it.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you get that?
The point is he doesn't get his release because he doesn't get the success of it. He doesn't get the final release of it.
It's not about the Joker not getting his release. It's about Gordon being turned into the same monster.
He doesn't get turned into a monster at all.
Essentially.
But that would have given the Joker what he was looking for. That would have given him the sexual release of it. And that's what I'm saying. That was the Joker's
motivation.
No.
It's not about the sexual release. He's forcing his mental anguish and his mental, he's trying to portray his perception of society on the purest of the pure in the entire mythos.
I understand that. And that's, but the thing is, when it comes to what a sadism wants to get out of whatever they're doing, the torturing and the suffering of the person that they're doing for it, it is a sexual release. Even if it's not
physically sexual, it's overtly sexual. I'm looking at that thinking it's a form of communication.
Okay.
Do you, I mean, there, I, no, is there a way it's that you not. Can see that?
I can, to an extent, I can kind of see where you're coming from, but I think it, I think it's, again, it's not how a true sadist would be dealing with things. A sadist would
you,
is wanting.
Well, then would you call the Joker a true sadist? Because the guy plans so much. His idea is to kind of throw a dark, twisted humor in the middle of his methods.
Yes. Sadists do have a plan for a lot of things.
Yes.
And that's where I think this character fails, in the sense of, I don't feel that this version of the character it has that sadist mentality. Well, it's more of a reactionary mentality. Now, I know
it is reactionary.
I know part of your argument that you've given me before about that, about it.
Well, here's the deal. This is like a fresh argument. I get to say that point.
Okay, go ahead.
My point is that you are watching this happen at the beginning. Does sadism start?
Yes.
Does sadism start in the mind without any influence?
If he had the
sadist... Or do you not need to be converted into thinking that that is the way that you act?
That's
behavior is learned.
Most of it is, yes. Although, there is some that there may be some that is not. That's a full-on discussion for another day. How much is nature? How much is nurture?
Right.
But...
this film also asks that question.
But... here's the thing. If he was going to be a sadist, his first encounters with murder would have taken a sadist twist, and they would not have given him the satisfaction, because he shows physical satisfaction.
Yes.
After committing the murders.
Even after the first one. Actually,
The murders would not give him the satisfaction that he needs. In fact, well, the first ones, he goes and seeks out the other person to finish the people murdering. Right? The train? He kind of goes and seeks out the last one to take care of. Little spoilery, but I'm not trying to give too much away.
Wait. I'm missing a section here. So there is, you're talking about the train.
Yes.
Okay.
He takes care of part of it on the train, and then kind of seeks out the other to finish the train thing, right?
I might have missed something, because I don't remember that. Anyway,
point being, the single point being, he gets the gratification after he's...
Oh, you're still thinking of the first... Okay, this is the first essential...
Yes.
This idea is that this is the first essential murder scene.
Yeah. So, he does get the gratification after the murders. If he was a true sadist, he would not get the gratification just after the basic murders. He would need more for that. And that's just... That's just a specific decision on the part of the filmmaker to have it be just the murders that give him the gratification and not the level of sadism.
Okay, one second before we get into that. I understand where your point is coming in. As far as that's concerned, I have to give away things in order to argue my point. I don't want to do that.
Okay, spoiler coming. Don't listen for a little bit.
Okay. there's no way that we're not going to do it. Okay. So a quick description of the scene. He's riding home on the subway. Three drunk guys start harassing a woman who looks at him for help.
Yeah, he goes to try to help.
And what ends up... He does not go to try to help, actually. He ignores them.
Okay.
He's reserved. And he starts involuntarily laughing, because one of the issues that he has is
a laughing condition.
He has a condition where he involuntarily, uncomfortably, painfully laughs.
Yeah.
This is something that he actually has. He has a card. You get that described to you near the beginning of the film. He starts involuntarily laughing. These men start having fun with the fact that this guy's laughing, and they assault him. They beat the living crap out of him.
Yeah.
Well, in the scene, he has a revolver in his pocket. And in response to them kicking the crap out of him, he shoots two of them on the train.
Yes.
One of them starts running off.
Yes.
He chases this guy down.
Yes.
And eventually shoots him as they get off of the train in the subway and runs for his freaking life until he finds an abandoned bathroom. And what ends up happening in the bathroom is he starts very awkwardly. No, not quite awkwardly. It's almost like this. It's almost like this Tai Chi snake dancing thing that he does. I call it snake dancing. Essentially, what happens in every pivotal point where he hits a new part of his transformation is he starts dancing. He starts. I call it skin shedding.
Yeah.
He's shedding his skin like a snake to another version of himself, step by step by step.
And
this
see,
is the second one of those dances that happens.
And see, this is the kind of the culmination
an eerie
of
development.
Yeah, well, and it's the culmination of him hitting that moment, but it comes with just simple murder.
And it's not simple murder. Here's the you're missing the point of the murder itself and what it does to him. It's what is the point of why is a sadist a sadist?
Because they derive joy and sexual satisfaction from the pain and suffering of other people.
Why do they derive that? Why do they pull that? Why do they get that? What is the point of it?
That's what sexually satisfies them. That's the point.
Okay. Would you consider that sadism has to do with having control and power over other people?
That may be a part of it.
Okay.
But that's not
I understand
the
there's a method and then there's a means. Okay. Those two are the same thing. There is a motive and there is a means to it. The means of the sadism and the sexual gratification is that's the means, that's the method that allows them that gratification. They find comfort in that.
But the key to
in
it,
that,
the key
in
to
that
it
idea
is,
of how to execute
that's fine,
their plan.
But the key to it is still pain and suffering of others.
No, okay, yes. I understand where you're coming down to. The problem is that you have to establish him as a sadist before he does anything. Therefore, he has to already be the Joker at that point when he pulls that off.
It starts
somewhere.
Yes, but people who would be considered sadists and or killers that would be considered sadists, those type of people, the sadist behaviors were like you say, it starts somewhere. Those behaviors, the basic tenets of those behaviors would have been long existent, lying dormant, peeking out occasionally at bits and places. The description of his emergence as a killer, his emergence as finding this as the new identity, shedding his skin, it does not fit into the role of a sadist. It does fit into the role of a killer and a murderer, but not specifically a sadist. And that's where this is a very just a personal issue of mine.
Okay.
My view of the Joker is more of a hyper-intelligent sadist. This doesn't quite fit into that view, and that's where I just have a personal disconnect. That's not saying that I'm not questioning the validity of this iteration, but maybe I'm going too far around to argue this specific point, but that's just my personal thing is I want him to be a much more hyper-intelligent sadist that spends the time to destroy a person mentally more so than anything else.
That point is absolutely valid because that's what he does. What you've described as the Joker in the comic book continuity, are correct.
He more mentally wants to mess with people than he ever wants to physically mess with people. I mean, he goes and kills his own self to try to make it pinned on Batman so that Batman is destroyed for it.
What continuity was that?
That's where he breaks his own back in Dark Knight Returns. Does he do that in Dark Knight Returns?
Wait,
isn't that when he breaks his own back? He tries to kill himself. He's fighting Batman.
No, he breaks his own neck.
It's his neck. Sorry, his neck.
He breaks his own neck. He comes out of a catatonic state and returns to society. It's actually where they get the scene from the talk show host is from Dark Knight Returns. Essentially,
the purpose is basically to have it pinned on Batman, the murderer of the Joker.
Essentially, yes. And actually, at one point, what happens is Batman grabs him by the head and starts breaking his neck and stops halfway through and goes, oh, God, what am I doing? And then the Joker's like, ha ha, I win. F you, and breaks his own, finishes the job for him. He's like, you're going to be pinned for this. They're going to come after you. And I finally win.
And that's the psychological level of that's
a
level
beautiful
of
moment.
Sadism.
That is a beautiful moment.
It is. And that's where, again, I just don't feel...
It's this
feel,
sadistic martyrdom, I guess.
Yes. And I just don't feel this specific iteration of the Joker hit it in that way for me, what I was looking for in, or what I would normally look for in a Joker character.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, I also did not feel that... everybody's or a lot of people's favorite Jack Nicholson's Joker.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that he was the proper makeup for a Joker either. I was personally very unpopular opinion. I was personally never happy with his performance at it. He was just a crazy gangster who fell in a vat of chemicals and kept being a crazy gangster, just a little more crazy.
Right.
And let's do some jokey things now. Look, I have a button on my hand that's going to electrocute the crap out of you.
Right.
And I'll say a whole bunch of funny things while it's happening.
I did like it. Okay. I will say I super like that dark take on the hand buzzer Joker on that shtick.
That works.
That was
if it's a different Joker.
Yeah.
Although he does have one of my favorite lines in any of the Batman movies.
This town needs an enema.
Yes. I'm so
glad
you
said that was good.
I'm so glad you knew that.
Yeah.
But anyway. I've never liked Jack Nicholson's portrayal of it because I didn't think it was right. That goes into my third point. We're doing a lot of time here. Here's my second point real quick. Second one, this one is something that just kind of came out from reading various things.
Okay.
There was a lot of talk beforehand of this being a kind of glorification of firearms.
Yeah.
Right? And
We're getting into like the social
this is some of the social
issues.
Things.
Okay.
It was talked about being kind of a glorification of firearms, glorification of gun violence. Right? There's talks about that.
No, there's not really a glorification. I do not agree with this, but please continue.
This was discussed. You agree that this was discussed.
I agree it was discussed.
This is one of the things that was said about this movie. The media was saying ahead of time, this glorifies gun violence, I don't agree with it that it glorifies
gun violence.
Yeah, I was going to
say it's absolutely incorrect.
What I find interesting is the way that it handles gun violence. This is very interesting, the way that it handles gun violence.
Okay.
Now, normally, when you talk about a film that's glorifying gun violence, normally films that talk about it, like the John Wick films, have been accused of it to some extent. Mm-hmm. And I can agree with that. I think of a movie like The Expendables, the whole Expendables series.
That's glorification of gun
violence.
That's what that is.
But you know what's interesting about those movies?
I would even consider Tarantino movies to be glorification of gun violence.
To some extent, yes. Yeah. To some extent. But you take a movie like The Expendables or Rambo, the Rambo movies.
That's totally.
Or the John Wick movies.
Yes.
How many guns do you see in those movies?
A billion freaking guns. All of the guns.
How many guns do you see in the Joker?
There's literally a single revolver.
And this is important, actually.
No, wait. I take that back. There is another one because of... There is a staple alleyway scene.
Yes, the alleyway scene one, but
that is the second gun in the entire movie.
The main gun that you see is the one revolver. This is actually very important because it has to do with the way that we interpret information.
Okay.
Okay? And this is why, in many ways, that one gun means so much more than the hundreds of guns you see in the Expendables movies, the John Wick movies, hell, the Matrix movies, the Rambo movies. This one gun means so much more.
What's your point?
When we see an overload of things, like when we have a public figure that constantly is using foul language and calling people names and doing terrible things, we kind of become numb to it because we see so much of it.
Okay.
But when we see a public figure that is normally very calm, very reserved, very soft-spoken, mm-hmm. raise their voice one time or use foul language one time, we pay more attention to that.
Yeah.
We're paying more attention to this single gun because this single gun is such an integral part of the story.
Okay.
And it is.
Yes,
it really
you're
is
correct.
An integral part of the story.
You are correct. It is a very – it's the wick.
But,
the thing is,
you have to wonder what exactly the director was trying to entail with having this one gun.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, I wouldn't say sadly, but interestingly, I think there is an interpretation that is more pro-gun than what most people would expect. Now, most people would think a movie like The Expendables is very pro-gun because of all these different guns, right?
Okay. What is? Yeah, I'm mildly concerned, and I'm very intrigued by your
interpretation.
Point. Okay, uh-huh.
This is an interesting interpretation, and I just the fact that the gun is almost the thing. Like you say, it's the wick. this is the thing that kind of empowers him.
That, yes, it is.
And that speaks very much to the pro-gun kind of mentality, is that the ownership of guns and the ability to have guns is what gives them their feeling of security and power and safety in this world. And I'm not saying this is what the filmmaker envisioned, but yeah. I can see it being used as this kind of an argument. Moreover,
I could see it being argued. Yes. Okay.
Moreover, the thing that actually bothers me, I wouldn't say bothers me, but is another thing that goes with the pro gun idea, is he's the one that commits the majority of the murders
right.
in the movie. He's mm-hmm. got the gun. He's a mentally ill man that has this gun,
right?
And as a result of some of the mistreatment of him, part of it to mm-hmm. do with his condition.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, every time he does murder somebody, something about his mental condition is the trigger for this. Am I wrong?
Like every time when he actually does,
that, he does commit a murder. Something about his medical illness.
They're reactionary, and a lot of the time they're reactionary and they're somewhat revenge based.
But the medical illness plays into this every single time, right? Something about the medical illness.
Why would you turn around and just straight up kill somebody without some kind of twisted? I don't understand why that is.
Because it is a point.
If you walk out into the middle of the street and flip and shoot somebody, there is something wrong with you. If you're walking out in the middle of the street,
my question would be then.
Yeah,
are you saying that the people that do go out and shoot these things up, that the problem is a mental illness problem and not a gun control problem?
That's not what I said. Don't twist it.
That's what I'm asking. I'm asking, is that what you're saying?
No.
Okay.
I'm saying that there are. Okay. This is a. You can't blame. You cannot blame the single ingredient for the cocktail. Okay,
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I get what you're saying there. You can't. You don't want to say that mental illness is the only thing to blame. However, by the structure of this story, an instance with his mental illness and something with his mental illness is the kind of impetus for each one of his murders. It's kind of the part of the inspiration. It's people's other reaction to his mental illness. But
that's not the case. It's a combination of different things. What this is an introduction to somebody who starts to become a cold-blooded killer because it is his only crutch to continue to survive. He sees it as the gun being like the only active gun throughout the entire film. That is a very, very good point. But it's not a pro-gun argument, and it's not – honestly, I consider it to be an anti-gun argument.
Okay.
It's a combination of two things. This is multiple instances and multiple ingredients in a cocktail of chaos that were to happen. I'm spoiling things by defending the point because I can essentially say that there is a multitude of situations that continue to feed his anxiety, his insecurity, and his feeling of loneliness and worthlessness.
Okay, but my question is.
And his sense of identity. There's so much that goes wrong, but I can't specifically say what those things are. There is a single gun in the film.
Okay.
And for the majority of the film, let's say. And that starts to become the thing that he holds on to,
okay,
because it's the only thing that doesn't change its purpose for him.
I get that.
His world falls apart because everything he attached himself to crumbles one way or the other. And the gun is the only thing that keeps its function.
Okay, I'm going to say that a pro-gun person would say, yeah, that makes total sense. A gun is the only thing that ever keeps its function for me, too. So, I mean, that argues the pro-gun side. But
consider it to argue the pro-gun side.
Because it's a weapon.
It's a dangerous thing. It is the thing that continues to be the thing. Is it a tool for destruction? Yes. Is it a tool for death? That's exactly its point.
That's why I'm saying the interpretation is very open in this, and this is a possible interpretation of it. Not the only one by any means, but a possible interpretation. But my real question is this. With all these various things that happens to him within the course of the film,
mm-hmm.
all these various setups that happen that you say are pieces that lead to all of this.
Yeah.
Does he have to have the mental illness for this all to still happen? And see, that's where the question comes in: is this
one of the things about this is I'm not going to the mental illness part. Remember, this takes place during a specific time period where mental illness was not focused on. And as a matter of fact, this film takes place in 1981.
Yeah.
Okay. Mental illness was not even really that much concentrated on in many aspects, and in many functions of society, it was not concentrated on. And mental illness has always been something that's been explored, but it hasn't been taken seriously, and it especially was not taken seriously at the time period. That time period is another factor in this situation.
I understand that, but can you at least see how having the character have mental illness and the mental illness being the reactions of other people to his mental illness and the way the mental illness manifests itself, the reactions of the people on the train to his laughter, the reactions that come later from as a result of different things. There's something to do with his mental illness coordinated with every murder that he does in some way, shape, or form. Can you see how that could be interpreted as mental illness can be the impetus for the violent, for people to have these violent crimes, these violent
like specifically tying things. Mental illness?
Because here's the thing.
Okay,
Hold on one second. Yeah.
We're talking about a fictional character that is a violent criminal that develops into a violent criminal.
I understand.
That is known to be put into an insane asylum on multiple points.
I understand
to
that.
To humanize that makes sense because they all have a beginning. They start somewhere, and he does become
unstable.
You're leading
into my third one so much. Okay.
But the problem here that people are absolutely misinterpreting, that I believe that you are also misinterpreting, is that this idea of the Joker character, the fact that it's supposed to be a beginning of this character, he's not going to have everything fleshed out. And I'm sorry, the dude's not just going to drop into an acid vat and turn into the top of the flipping chain.
I'm not saying
he's going to develop into that.
I understand that.
And I don't understand why people don't see that. Look, all of the previews, every single preview, all the things that people are talking about with this film right now, people are all of a sudden surprised at the fact that this is some kind of beginning backstory. It's a backstory. Like,
yeah.
I don't understand people that go and see this as a backstory and be like, I don't understand why he's not just some crazy, sadistic, like, all of a sudden, already developed character. No. It doesn't make sense.
I didn't expect him to be an already developed character, and
but it's really starting to bug me.
And that's not my argument in either of these arguments. I've not put forth the fact that he should be fully developed. Again, with the sadism argument, I wanted to see the beginnings of the sadism coming forward. For me, for my iteration of the Joker, and I don't see the sadism, I see the straight murdering, which is a different psychopathy.
I mean, but I think that it has the potential to develop into that.
I would say from my understanding of the way sadism develops in people, it's a whole different psychopathy,
okay.
Which is fine.
I do not have a background in psychology, I do not know that.
That
is correct. I cannot contest that as a non-expert.
And again, that's just the director and the writer's choice of how they wanted to show his specific psychopathy.
Okay.
And I see the Joker as more of the sadist. In the second one,
understand your point.
In the second one, I'm just talking about how a pro-gun person could interpret this movie. And the argument that is very big among the pro-gun people and among the political parties that support the pro-gun people is... Especially specifically,
it's not the gun. It's the person holding the gun,
and it's a mental illness. It's a mental illness, and that's the big thing. Is mental illness is the word that they throw around, to try to protect the gun itself. And we have this gun.
Well, first
being,
off, if you're trying to, I'm not getting into that part of the conversation.
No, I'm not. This is not my personal views.
I have so much to say, but I'm not going to say.
This is not my personal views on the situation. I'm just saying this is what the pro-gun lobby and the pro-gun side of things is saying and using as their stuff, and how this could be interpreted in that fashion, which shows again how open to interpretation this movie is and the way that they handle it. I don't know how much he was looking for interpretation, the director. I mean, there's also the interpretation, this is just a quick throw out, that this could be his statement against what he feels is a new regime of comedy films, and yeah. Because he was a comedy film director, and his feelings of voicelessness and powerlessness the director's personal feelings of voicelessness and powerlessness in the new comedy regime, and this is kind of a movie of him trying to work through those issues personally. That's an interpretation, which to me makes sense, because I being somebody who wanted to be in
a possibility.
That is a possibility.
But, I mean, comedic actors cross over into drama all the time. So do directors.
But I'm thinking there's the fact they cross over and do different genres. But there's also the fact that he's been he actually outwardly said about this movie that he was trying to kind of flip the whole comic book movie thing on its head when he was doing this. So, I mean,
this is one of the first dramatic R-rated comic pieces, technically speaking.
I mean, it depends on how you want to look at it, but yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You have, from the R-rated comic book films, you have Venom, you have Blade, you have Deadpool.
Watchmen.
But it's the first of the, it is the first non-sensationalized, and I consider it non-sensationalized because it's very dry. It's very uncomfortable. It's very ugly, and it's ugly on purpose.
Yeah, no, I get that.
It's you are supposed to be uncomfortable while you watch it.
I understand.
That's the point. I'll tell you this. If you were not uncomfortable watching Taxi Driver.
Interesting note.
And it's totally a nod to old Scorsese films and stuff. Of course,
Taxi Driver and
King of Comedy.
And King of Comedy.
If you were not uncomfortable watching those films, which that's the point of those films, to be uncomfortable while watching them. It's weird. It's a weird form of entertainment.
Well, actually, what's weird about that is that's going back to my personal vendetta against Martin Scorsese at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Those are so to speak considered wonderful, great movies that are those are cinema as far as he's concerned. I just wouldn't be proud of a movie of mine that was the supposed inspiration for an attempted presidential assassination. So there's that.
That's completely unintentional.
It's an intentional.
That's like saying Silence of the Lambs was the reason. Was that what Taxi? Because that was Jodie Foster,
Driver.
Right?
It was Taxi Driver.
It was Jodie Foster, right? She was like 14.
The guy who tried to kill Reagan.
Yeah, trying to impress Jodie Foster. That's completely unrelated.
I'm just saying.
Completely unrelated.
But then why make an homage to that? That's my personal opinion. Again, I wouldn't make an homage to that, but that's me.
Because it has nothing to, the actions of the one crazy son of a gun has nothing to do with the point of the film.
Okay, but
it has nothing to do with the point of the film. Yeah, you can reference it because the vast majority of the human race that saw that film weren't inspired to shoot the president for Jodie Foster.
True, but
so those are the people that are your audience.
Okay. Again, that's a personal choice to make that. I wouldn't do it personally.
I would say that, like, if I will tell you this, as somebody who creates media, as somebody who creates music, if I had to be afraid of my point because of how I thought people would interpret it, I wouldn't make anything.
I can understand that.
So I don't see that as, I can understand people that do not create, but if you're not creating something out of fear, and I'll say this to anybody who's listened to this, who likes to make stuff, who likes to make music, and I don't care how controversial it is, especially with somebody who listens to controversial music or media or whatever. If you are afraid of making something because you're afraid of how people are going to interpret it, you're never going to make anything.
I'll keep that in mind.
Okay.
So, final point.
Yeah.
Final one. Here's the one that really hit me. It was kind of, this is my gotcha moment. This is the one I haven't warned you at all about.
Okay.
And this is, again, part of the reason why, even from the beginning, before anything came out with this movie, I said even before this came out that I wasn't that interested in it because of Joaquin Phoenix. I'm not a personal Joaquin Phoenix fan. That's not the point.
Okay.
I had another reason why I wasn't interested in this.
Okay.
And it's the same problem I kind of have with the Michael Keaton, Tim Burton Batman.
Okay.
This movie, to me, is very much akin to what I feel the prequels did to Darth Vader. I personally don't want the backstory of the Joker. I don't want to see where he came from. I understand there's a market of
people that
do.
That don't want that, yeah.
there's a market to do. But I feel that this can do the same thing to the character of the Joker that the prequels did for me to the character of Darth Vader. I liked more of the mystery surrounding it. I didn't want to see, especially with the Darth Vader situation, I didn't want to see the whiny teenager who was just a little bit rebellious.
Okay.
That takes the character and turns. Now when I watch Darth Vader, he's, as much as I love the character, he's just, it's a whiny little, you know what, wearing a breathing apparatus. Great. I don't think so. Hope it doesn't get inside my helmet. That's how I feel about it watching now. And it hurts me because I loved Darth Vader as a character. He was just this mysterious badass in a black suit. I didn't even like it when they revealed that he was a, you know, crusty old man at the end of Jedi. But you watch
crusty old white man.
Exactly.
That's one of the best lines in that damn film.
Deep down inside, we all just want to be white. Well, isn't that true? Black rage. Watch the movie.
Yeah. Was it Chasing Amy?
Chasing Amy.
Yeah. Watch Chasing Amy. It's one of the best scenes of the damn film.
It's the best scene in the movie, period.
Yeah, that's
true. It is literally the best scene in the movie.
He's what has that actor done since? Because he was great in that movie.
He's only had a few, I think, smaller roles.
Ah, that sucks.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
He's great.
But that's
I don't even know his name.
That's
kind of, I'm gonna look it up after we're done.
That's kind of how I felt when I even heard about the Joker coming out, and I at least knew it was an origin story. But I look into things a lot more than most people do. Mm-hmm. Most people sadly saw the Joker. They're these type of people that post that I want a relationship like Joker and Harley type crap.
I want to wring those people's necks. That is the dumbest thing.
It is. But the thing is,
it is textbook. Like sadistic abuse.
Very much so.
Textbook abuse.
Very much. But people don't want to. Again,
this is the dumbest thing you could say.
This is how people approach these things, and that's what
they think. They look at Joker and Harley Quinn, and they think Gomez and Morticia Adams. That's the problem.
Or they think a more hardcore version of them, and they want to be hardcore. Gomez is awesome.
Gomez and Morticia are the best marriage in cinema.
Yeah, I'd almost agree with that.
Yeah.
I would almost agree with that. Those two are awesome. They love each other's tone no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's the thing is, to me, I saw an origin story for a character I don't want an origin for. I like the mystery.
I can understand
that. Which is one of the reasons, I actually liked Heath Ledger's portrayal the most. Mm-hmm. Was the mystery behind it? There was multiple backstories that he gave as part of descriptive stuff, but there was never a single backstory. There was so much mystery you didn't know the character. To me, it's like not seeing the shark in Jaws. You don't see the shark for the majority of the movie.
Right.
The mystery behind it for me as a consumer, I like more of the mystery. I don't want to know where this crazy guy came from, because that the humanizing of it, the realistic point of it to me, it robs it of its power. It robs it of its, which some people want. And I understand that some people want
that. I don't think it robs it of its power. I don't agree with that.
You may think that it empowers it even more. To me,
it does, because it gives you, it's not that you don't want to sympathize with him. You don't necessarily have to empathize with him either. What you need to do is realize that this person had a beginning, and he was a human being, and he's not a mysterious character. Although there are, as far as the mystery, there is, I think there's like five different beginnings to the Joker, the potential beginnings to the Joker, and the Killing Joke is only one of them. And everybody credits Frank Miller with writing that backstory that's not a backstory, which is fine, but there is a ton of backstory possibilities of who the Joker could be and how long he's been around and all of these things.
The thing
there's
I like
not the, even one technical Joker.
Well, no, and that's
there's
and,
more than one.
And that's the thing is the thing I like.
There's so much happening.
The thing I like about it is the idea that there is no specific singular background to it.
There and isn't. That, and this and is that, see, this is the thing is consider this as another potential background.
Well, and that's very much what it is and could be. It's just not something I personally ever needed to have in cinema. But the thing is, that means very specifically, this movie wasn't made for me. This movie was made for you.
That makes sense.
And that's why it's okay to disagree on these things, because what it comes down to is we each have our own things that we like and love. But I was just presenting some of the various ideas and interpretations that could be possible on a film that at least I think will go down, if not anything else. This is a film that is a major, major talking point in society.
Absolutely. And honestly, okay, so all of the polarizing discussion and I will say this as a final point for myself, okay? All of the polarizing discussion that's coming out based on this film, I think it's fantastic.
Okay.
I think that people hating it and people loving it, I think people going in, now, don't get me wrong, there's people that come in to see it that want to come in and like laugh at the weird, terrible scenes that happen, which when I went, there were people that were laughing at those scenes. They are watching it for the wrong damn reason. There are people that walked out because they were just like, man, this guy's like sadistic and he's killing people and he's like got mental health issues. I was like, he's the Joker, you idiot. You think he's just some whimsical Jack Nicholson, Cesar Romero version?
Oh, God, Nicholson.
Come on, man. Like, that's not who the Joker is. You've never read a damn comic book in your life.
No, that's, if that's the case. Again, that's one of the things that the Heath Ledger one did get closer to right was the plans within plans within plans.
Oh, man. I got to show you a film theory on that.
That's the military theory?
No, no, that he actually the point of this, and we'll watch it afterwards because we got a little time after this is done. There is a film theory that just came out. It's a YouTube channel. Look them up. It's called The Film Theorists, about the Joker actually accomplishing legitimately everything he set out to do.
Yeah, he did,
including saving Gotham in the second film.
Yeah, he did. He did everything.
He did everything he wanted to do, and it's fantastic. The presentation of the information was great.
Oh yeah,
but
he won.
That he won. The Joker wins.
Very much won.
Yeah, the quote unquote bad guy wins, but the twist of him being the hero of the story and the fact that it's so good. It's so good. But anyways, that aside, take this as the discussions that are being had about this film, and I'm talking like there are people with multiple racial and ethnic backgrounds that are doing pieces on this. There are people that are the gun discussion and the mental health discussion and
there's
the
so much
interpretation, misinterpretation, all of this stuff that's happening. Whether or not you hate or love the movie, the fact that you are having these discussions is a very good thing.
It can't. I mean, it is in the sense that
you have the. My point is, yes, they are polarizing. They're as polarizing as politics right now in general.
But the
fact that there is a discourse that's being had and pieces that are being written about this film and the fact that it's starting this huge discussion about the points that are being made in the film.
Points that we brought up here.
Who knows whether or not you're interpreting them or not. This is a good thing. This is the growing pains of society at work.
I see that.
And I think it's a good thing.
Good. I'm glad we were able to have the discussion on it.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Me too.
All right. I hope you all enjoyed.
Yeah.
If you're listening to us, hopefully you're listening to us, where can you listen to us, Mike?
Man, there are so many places. We are on TuneIn. We are on Spotify. We are on
Google.
Google Podcast. Yeah, that's right. TuneIn, Spotify, Google Podcast. You can find us. You can subscribe to us in Apple Podcast by subscribing to the website, thezennialchronicles.com/feed/podcast. It'll show up in your feed after that. If you don't have any podcast stuff or you happen to have a YouTube channel, you can check us out on YouTube at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. You can find us on Facebook at Zenchron. The YouTube channel actually has our entire back library.
Yes.
All of our podcasts from the very beginning.
We also have our own website, thezennialchronicles.com. Yes, and it's all of those words.
Yep. You can listen to us there as well. As well as you can also type in zenchron.com and reach us there. And I think that is about it, man.
Thank you.
The place you could find us.
Thank you all for listening. And we will talk to you again next week.
Have a good day.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.